Scan and the crowd say Radio Yorkshire. Scan and the crowd say Radio Yorkshire.
Radio Yorkshire is moving. On the 1st of July, you'll need to rescan your digital radio set to find your favourite station again. So if you still want to hear more of this...
Cross, he's gone for a little grubber kick himself and he's picked it up. He'll score underneath the post. Moment of utter magic.
Make sure you rescan your digital radio on the 1st of July. If you need any help or advice on rescanning, go to www.radioyorkshire.co.uk/rescan for more details.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to The Bigger Picture here on Radio Yorkshire on what must be, guys, the hottest day of the year. Surely. We're all struggling in the office, aren't we?
Yeah, and I'm not usually acclimatised to heat.
No, you're not.
I'm a cold person.
That's the voice of Danny Parkinson, who's joining me for the next 2 hours here, and has been wearing a pretty incredible combination of T-shirt, shorts and Chelsea boots today.
Yeah, just in case you're watching on the video, I am styling the new selection for the summer. I like to call it the South of Spain look.
Okay.
So if you are going to anywhere like Magaluf, Benidorm, anywhere like that, feel free to wear this.
Well, there you go. There's some style tips from Danny Parkinson. Also in the studio, the Wolf of Guiseley, Tom Feeney.
I love that. Hello, how are we doing?
It's not the worst nickname ever, but
I promise it's not a compliment.
I take that as a compliment. Please don't take it as a compliment.
I'll get all the players to call me.
Probably explain why we'd be calling that in the office. Well, I'm pushing for him to be called that in the office because the non-league football season's approaching. I believe the fixture list is announced on Friday. Tommy's Mr. Guiseley, probably Yorkshire's biggest non-league football expert, and you've been striding up and down the corridor, so many phone calls. They all look like summits about to happen or big business deals about to go through. What is happening in these phone calls? I mean, you're supposed to be working for one.
Ben Parker spoke to me, the Guiseley fullback. He revealed that he turned down a couple of Football League sides to stay with Guiseley. You'll have heard that interview on Leeds show today. Lee Ashforth, the Harrogate Railway manager, has also revealed that he's in talks with a number of players. So I've just been getting them talks out of the way. And I've also been having a chat with Neil Aspin, trying to get something in the line for Friday when the fixtures are announced at 1 p.m.
Oh, and it was quite funny when you were on the phone to Mr. Aspin, wasn't it? Because you made a joke about his other profession that fell flat.
Yeah, it did. It fell on deaf ears.
It really did. A few bits of admin to get through before we move on with the show. Probably the hottest day of the year. I think it's been close to 30 degrees.
Yeah.
The air conditioning is still broken. So it's just been an absolute drag today, hasn't it? Let's face it. I mean, I've broken the shorts taboo today. I just thought there's no way I'm wearing smart trousers today. Danny, you came in trousers.
Yeah.
And made the change over to the shorts.
I did, yeah. I went holiday shopping, saw you coming in the rather fetching pair of shorts and thought, that's it now. That rule, you know, there is no rule on pants now. So
would you have made the change if I come in trousers?
No, I'm not a trendsetter.
I'm a trendsetter then?
Yeah.
That's nice of you. Tom, on the other hand, incredible combination.
Trendsetter,
Short sleeve white shirt. Buttons all the way undone to the bottom, and a white t-shirt underneath, sort of a little bit like a pensioner on holiday. That's what I'd say. Are you going to stick up for yourself, Tom?
I try to. To be honest, I misjudged the situation today. I thought it wasn't going to be as warm as it was. I thought it was just all hype and it'd be really warm down south and up here it'd be okay. But yeah, it's caught me out. And I was told the air conditioning might be fixed today, a couple of days ago, which it hasn't.
I believe that's tomorrow. So next week... I mean, it's been a month nearly, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's been horrible in this studio. Mm. Anyway, that's the first bit of admin. So heat and clothes, tick. Lads' outfits, tick. Tom, you nearly got mugged at Dublin Airport.
Yes, I did. I was asleep at Dublin Airport because what was the point in buying paying for a hotel room when I was on the plane at 5 a.m? So I thought I'd just have a couple of hours kip in the airport.
The tightest man I know.
And two rather large gentlemen They thought I was asleep. I could hear one of them talking about that lad with his bag. Realised I was the only person in there that was male because there was only two women that was at the other end of the room asleep. And I thought, oh, OK. So I sat up, stared at them for a couple of seconds, and thankfully they went away.
Excellent.
There you
well,
go.
I'm glad you weren't mugged, Tom. Might have done you good, some would say. Never mind.
Literally, there was
no... serve you right, though, really, for being too tight to pay for 30, 10 quid for a hostel for a night.
No money in the wallet, anyway. So, there you go.
Not for the first time.
No words.
No words. So that's Tom's little break recently ticked off. Danny, you're off to Benidorm soon.
Yeah, I've got a breaking out, you know, the kit now.
Yeah.
It's getting real.
It's getting real. On the day that Leeds United photos emerge of their new kit, you've been holiday shopping.
Yeah.
Picked up that little number. Tell us about your trip to Benidorm, because I mean, I've noticed that footballers are all on holiday at the moment. You know, Miami.
Yeah.
LA. You know, Balearic Islands.
And
you're off to essentially a place where Scottish people go.
I really like the idea of Benidorm. I think now I have to sort of move away from Magaluf. I don't think there's any room for that anymore. So, you know, I'm taking a step up.
Cultural step.
Yeah, before you know it, Bill, we'll be going to Greece together.
Maybe not.
No,
I really don't. Especially if you know where Chelsea boots are short. Coming up on tonight's show, it's been another big day of Wimbledon action. We'll round up all of the results and a pretty mixed day for Britain's tennis stars. It may have been a pretty miserable tournament for England. It's the final of the under-21 European Championship tonight with kick-off in less than an hour's time. We'll be getting a lowdown on the final and the competition in general with 442 Magazine's Jonathan Faduba. We'll bring you up to date with all the transfer tittle-tattle, including the latest on Leeds defender Sam Byram. Could he be moving over to Everton in the Premier League? And of course, we'll have the usual stuff, which includes our incredibly difficult sports quiz.
The Bigger Picture with Billy Banks on Radio Yorkshire.
But first, let's cross to the Czech Republic, because the under-21s European Championship final kicks off at 7:45 between Sweden and Portugal. Joining us to preview the game and look back at the tournaments in general is 442 Magazine writer and editor of JustFootball.com. That's Jonathan Faduba. Jonathan, thank you very much for joining me this evening. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm very, very good, thank you. Bit hot in an unair-conditioned studio, but apart from that, everything is OK. The final's just about to get underway over in the Czech Republic, Sweden v Portugal. Is it fair to say that these are two finalists that we didn't expect?
I think it's fair to say that Sweden were unexpected finalists. No one really expected them to get this far. They were quite lucky to qualify. They had a late goal to qualify in the original qualifiers. Then they had a late goal to qualify in the playoffs against France, which was a very famous incident in which a French player was teasing the team after scoring a goal in the last minute. And then Sweden went straight up the other end and scored to qualify and basically took the mickey out of him. There's a very famous picture on Twitter of them taking the mickey out of France, basically.
I've seen it. It's very funny.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was a bit of revenge for the French team. And then they've just carried on from there, really, and gone all the way to the final. It's quite unexpected. Obviously, England beat them. But yeah, they've made it this far, and they have a decent chance. Portugal, they were one of the favourites. They were very strong in qualifying. Blitz their qualifying group. They have some excellent players at this level, and they were considered sort of, you know, perhaps behind England and Germany, maybe in Italy they were considered one of the big teams. But Sweden are definitely a surprise package. So it's a slightly unexpected final, yeah.
Very surprised to see John Guidetti playing for Sweden. He must be about 30, surely.
Yeah, it seems like he's been around for years, doesn't it? He was obviously was at Manchester City and had a loan spell at Feyenoord. He's been one of the real leaders of this team. I've been out in Prague, you know, covering the tournament on Just Football, and he was superb. The Swedish fans love him. I was at the England game, for example, and he's like their new Zlatan in a way. The way they cheer for him, they love him, they've got a song for him, and he's one of their main characters. You know, he's very flamboyant, very kind of kisses the badge, and you know, he loves Sweden, basically, and they love him back.
He's left Manchester City now after his contract ran out. What's next for John Guidetti?
It was an interesting one, really. He had a very famous quote saying that he's not even worth a cheeseburger at the moment. He's worth no more than a cheeseburger because he's obviously on a free transfer at the end of this tournament. So
that's one way of putting it, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's one way of putting it. So I think he'll be costing a few cheeseburgers to whichever club wants him now, because he's had a very good tournament. He's led the line well. He scored important goals, and I think there'll be a few calls to him after this tournament. So he's done his value no harm in this tournament.
Now, you mentioned the Portugal side's got plenty of stars. One of them, William Carvalho. It's been linked with moves to the Premier League over the last few seasons. Teams like Manchester United and Arsenal have apparently been looking at him. How good has he been in this tournament? And is he worth one of these big clubs going for him?
Yeah, he's been exceptional. He's definitely been one of the stars of the tournament. There's no doubt about that. He's a very strong sort of holding midfielder. He can dictate play in midfield. It's almost like watching a man against boys at times in this tournament. He's 23, I believe. So he's just at the limit of the threshold of playing in this tournament, and he's really dominated the midfield in certain games. He's the sort of anchor that allows the rest of the Portuguese kind of flair players to do their thing. The likes of Bernardo Silva, who's another star of this tournament. Carvalho just sort of sits in there and dominates midfield. And against Germany, he was superb when the Portuguese battered Germany in the semi-finals, and he was a real star. And yeah, Premier League clubs have been looking at him for quite a long time, and maybe this summer there might be a few offers.
Is he ready for that move? Because we all know he's a big physical player. He has got European experience as well, but they want a lot of money for him. Would he be worth a price tag of around £24 million?
Yeah, that's the £24 million question, isn't it, in a way? It's hard to really say if he's instantly ready to go into like a Premier League top, kind of Champions League team and start dominating from the off. If we were to compare him to, say, someone like Paul Pogba, who's obviously a lot higher, more highly rated, he's a kind of ready-made player who could go straight into a Premier League team and dominate. I think Carvalho might need a bit of time to adjust. He's been playing, in the Portuguese League, which is a slightly lower level than the Premier League. And this tournament, is very wary. You have to be, at sometimes in these kind of youth tournaments, you can stand out at this kind of level and then go to a top league, and kind of it might take you a bit of time to adjust. I think in the long term, he probably will be worth around the 20 million mark. But if you were to say he would go into a club and instantly dominate, I think he might take some time. If he went to somewhere like Manchester City or Arsenal, it might take him a while, but he's had an excellent tournament, and he's definitely a star in the making.
Now, Portugal, over the years, have produced some marvellous players. I'm thinking Ronaldo, Rui Costa, Figo, the list goes on. Out of this team, apart from Carvalho, have any other players stood out as maybe being able to go on and do great things?
Yeah, the player everybody's talking about is Bernardo Silva. He's the number 10 for them. He's the kind of creator in chief. He's the he's the main man. He's been exceptional. He reminds a bit of David Silva. He's reminiscent of David Silva, sort of his namesake in a way. He's a left-footed player, superb on the ball, very technical, very crafty. Plays between the lines. He's a wonderful player. He's at Monaco at the moment, and he's been the star of the tournament, and he's probably the one who's really sort of stood out and suggested that he could go to the next level. He's definitely one to watch tonight and in the future as well. They have a few other players who've done well. I mean, Portugal seem to have a problem throughout their whole youth categories and throughout their whole, the last 10 years. They haven't had a good striker, really, which has cost them at major tournaments. And they've been using like a right back as a striker and a winger as a striker. So Ivan Cavalero and Ricardo, but they've got a collection of really, really good players. Guerrero on the left, who plays for Lorient in France, is another left back. He's one of the Premier League clubs have looked at. I could go through the whole team, to be honest. They've really got a strong team, and they're big favourites tonight.
So an intriguing clash. You say Portugal the favourites. Do you think Sweden could pull off a shock?
I do, actually. Yes, I've kind of been saying for a while that I think Sweden have a real chance of maybe winning this tournament, simply because they just never give up. Sometimes it's kind of, it seems to be written in the stars in some tournaments where a team just kind of, they cling on for at all costs. Don't forget they were just a few minutes from going out in the group stages. Italy, obviously, when they beat England, they were, Sweden were heading out, and then they equalised in the last sort of 5 minutes. And it was a theme that just continued this whole tournament, even in qualifying. They just seem to keep clinging on. Portugal are the better team in terms of their technical ability and their all-round, skill. But Sweden have that team spirit. They have a very compact kind of Atletico Madrid-style kind of 4-4-2 shape, and, very compact and tight and work hard. And, if they nick one goal, you never know. The two teams played in qualifying, in the group stages, and they drew 1-1. Portugal are massive favourites, but I don't think anyone can write off Sweden, to be honest. I think they're going to be a worthy competitor.
And we've got to mention England quickly, and we should probably make it quite quickly as well, because it wasn't the best of tournaments for the England side. They played both Sweden and Portugal in the group stages, of course. Was it as bad as everyone's made out? Is English young football in such a dire state?
That's a very good question. I mean, how long have you
started
got?
It with the side, so I presume this is not going to be positive.
Yeah, exactly. How long have you got? I mean, I followed England in Olomouc and went, you know, at the Sweden game, and I thought it's very hard with England, because they did quite well in qualifying, and you know they beat Germany, for example, in a friendly. They went into it, you know, Gareth Southgate had a very good record in qualifying, but then England just seemed to have this problem where I think they tend to struggle with controlling the flow of a game. I think that's one of England's major problems. I think there's been a massive investment, and you know there's been a lot of talk about England DNA. This whole new scheme put in by the FA to introduce this English DNA of kind of how all teams are going to play from youth team to the senior team. But I think England struggle. They struggle to control games, and they kind of drift in key moments. They don't know how to control. They don't know when to play and when to kind of, you know, drop deep. They struggle to maintain the intensity of, you know, the Premier League for too long. Against Italy, for example, they started very well, but then, you know, they were overwhelmed in the end. And you know, Italy know how to kind of, you know, they know when to contain, and then they know when to sort of, you know, pick their moments and go for it. And England kind of lack that game intelligence, I think, is the main problem. It's not the individual players. I mean, there's players like Harry Kane in the team. There's players like, there's a lot of good Premier League players. But I suppose the other thing is that there were a lot of players who weren't there who could have gone, the likes of Luke Shaw, Raheem Sterling, Oxlade-Chamberlain and those. So that's always another debate. But that's the power of the Premier League, I guess. And a lot of clubs don't want their players going to those tournaments.
No, I think it's a debate that'll rumble on for a very long time. Well, enjoy the final tonight, Jonathan. You've been covering the whole tournament. Where can people go and find your reports?
Yeah, it's at Just Football on Twitter. So, at Just Football. And the website's called Just Football. You can Google it, or it's just-football.com. We've been following the tournament extensively. So, you can check it out on there. We cover world football around the world. So, have a look.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time, Jonathan. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks a lot.
Billy, Danny and Tom. Trios are now cool. Just look at Take That. The Bigger Picture on Radio Yorkshire.
Welcome back to The Bigger Picture here on Radio Yorkshire, where we'll start with some breaking news. This just in, Leicester City have sacked their manager Nigel Pearson. Now, plenty of money being spent on him being sacked this evening, and it's now been confirmed on Leicester City's website. Tom Feeney, I'll come to you first. Are you surprised by this? Pardon the pun, it seems like a bit of a bolt out of the blue.
Well, it's one of them, isn't it? I mean, he was relieved of his duties in February. He was then, it was a quick U-turn, he got the job back, and he kept them in the Premier League. He did exactly what he needed to do. What surprises me is, you know, he's been making signings. Robert Huth talked about Pearson. Jeffrey Schlupp signed a new contract yesterday, spoke about Pearson. I mean, you know what, the first thing that goes through my head for me was Sheffield Wednesday are on the lookout for a new head coach. And he's a Sheffield Wednesday legend. Mark Cooper and Swindon, it seems to be, well, it's been going on for 2 weeks, that. Now, could that happen? Could Pearson become the new head coach of Sheffield Wednesday? I know Wednesday fans would want it to, and that job appears to be now anyone's for the taking.
Well, I think Pearson probably fancies himself as a Premier League manager, but that would be a good challenge at Sheffield Wednesday. It'd be very interesting to see if that happened. There's a statement as well from the club. The board of directors recognises the success Nigel has helped to bring to Leicester City during his two spells in charge of the club, particularly during the last 3.5 years. However, it's become clear to the club that fundamental differences in perspective exist between us. Regrettably, the club believes that the working relationship between Nigel and the board is no longer viable. Leicester City's owners and board of directors would like to place on record their thanks to Nigel for their considerable contribution he's made during his time with the club, and wish him well in the future. So it's official, Leicester City have sacked Nigel Pearson. Now, this isn't long since his son was involved in that terrible, I don't know how to describe it really, that incident whilst the club were in Thailand on a post-season tour. But is it Ostrichgate, Danny, that's really cost him his job at Leicester, do you think?
I think Ostrichgate was the biggest thing that obviously happened to him, but you've got to remember there were quite a few incidents this season.
He told a fan to F off and died, didn't he?
Yeah, I was going to say the ruckus with a fan, what happened with McCarthy on the pitch, you know, stuff like that. It all seems to have really spiralled. And you know, there was always those rumours that he was going to go towards the end of the season. They'd be happy that they didn't sack him then. It was a miraculous survival from relegation.
It really was.
You know, he won himself Premier League Manager of the Month as well. You know, he really did turn it around. But I think that just the last few weeks have just taken the toll. And I think, you know, if they were going to get rid of him, you know, now was the perfect time to move on and build for next season.
So, Tom, what does this mean for Leicester going forward? Because we're expecting Chris Wood, the striker, to sign for Leeds United maybe tomorrow. And when you get these sort of situations when a manager leaves, these moves can be put on hold because the new manager might come in and decide, no, there's a place for him in my team, I want to use him. I mean, could this have an effect?
It most certainly could. I mean, there have been examples of players. I look at Sean Scannell. There was a deal agreed that he would leave Huddersfield for Millwall. Chris Powell came in as manager and was asked, look, you can okay this deal if you want. And he said, no, he will be a starting player. And he became a starting player for them. So this deal definitely could be placed on hold. They might wait now until the new manager comes in, or they might say, right, before the new manager comes in, we'll give him £2.5-3 million to spend a bit more when he comes in. So who knows, but there must be question marks now regarding this deal for Chris Wood to Leeds United.
Glenn Murray as well is at Crystal Palace. He was basically about to leave for a championship loan, and Alan Pardew came in and said, no, I want you to play for me. And he had a big, you know, big contribution in them having a really good second half of the season. So wouldn't be surprised to see that move put on hold tomorrow, which would be a big shame for Leeds because he's a very good championship striker. So there you go. Leicester City have dispensed of the services of Nigel Pearson. I'm sure some Premier League midfielders, some fans and some forms of ostriches will be pretty happy with the news.
If you're having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son.
I got 59% win ratio is second to none.
Well, as you expect, Twitter's exploded with the news that Nigel Pearson has been sacked by Leicester City. Plenty of bants knocking about, and Danny Parkinson's got a few tweets for us.
Yeah, some funny ones, a lot relating to ostriches.
Of course, good ostrich banter.
Exactly, a lot relating to, as we were saying earlier, the differences in perspective of the club going forward. People making
so that was
that
the comment on
will.
The board's official statement, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
differences in perspective between the Leicester City board and the manager, Nigel Pearson.
That's it. That's exactly it. People are going wild with that. I imagine that's exactly the kind of thing we'll be seeing over the next few days. But yeah, he's some very funny stuff on Twitter.
We can't really repeat much of it.
A
little bit orgy related as well.
That's it. I'm trying to censor myself going down, and I was like on the Twitter, and I just couldn't find much.
Yeah, you've got to think about decency and taste.
Yeah.
Exactly. I've got something. This was making me laugh earlier. I was looking through the football fixtures for tonight because, of course, it's the under-21s European Championships final at the moment. And Danny's going to be giving us a score update very soon on that one. But I was just looking there. Really get annoyed, I do, with Tom Feeney on this show because he knows far too much about football. For a small man from Yorkshire.
I think this could capture, and I'd say an average size man from Yorkshire.
That's no, I would say small. So I was looking through the fixtures tonight, so obviously looking at England, looking at the under-21s, sorry, and then I was looking at tonight's the first qualifying round for the Champions League and Europa League. So it's currently 0-0, by the way, between Sweden and Portugal, 20 minutes in. So some of the team names are absolutely fantastic. So what I've done is I've picked out some of the teams, and you've got to guess which country that team is from. Danny's going to have a go as well. Danny's actually quite good with geographical things.
This is the thing. I'd like to think my interests are more non-league, League 2, League 1, rather than European teams. So I might struggle with this. I think Danny will beat me quite easily.
Well, what I've cleverly done is I've omitted all the ones that have actual cities that you might have heard of in there. So that's already one clue completely gone. Mainly just random team names. So we're going to start off with Lincoln Red Imps. They're playing tonight. This is God's honest truth. They're playing in the first round of qualifying for the Champions League tonight. Lincoln Red Imps. Where are they from?
I really don't know. I mean, immediately all I'm thinking about is Lincoln and the Imps being English, but obviously I don't think they've...
European qualifying. I don't think the English national... teams will be, you know... Yeah. It's only Manchester United who've got to qualify.
Yeah, I don't think the National League side would be in the Champions League. I don't know.
I'm going to go for Norway.
Norway, okay. So Danny's gone for Norway. Come on, Lincoln Red Imps.
God, I don't know. It's the kind of team I'd associate with somewhere like Canada, but I know obviously they're not going to be...
Europe!
No, I know that, but... I'll say Denmark.
It's Gibraltar.
Oh!
There you go. They're playing, incidentally, tonight. FC Santa Coloma. Where do you think they're from? These are real football teams.
That sounds Italian.
Okay.
To me. I think it might
be
Italian.
Why would it be Italian?
You know,
bear in mind,
they'd be Serie A.
The
team,
Italian
then.
Sides are Juventus, Roma, and Lazio.
No, I didn't mean Italy. I meant Albania.
Albania? Okay. Yeah.
I'll say Georgia.
Georgia and Albania. It's Andorra.
Oh, Andorra. So close.
Also tonight, Folgore Falciano.
That's San Marino.
Yes, it is. He's got one. Crusaders FC. No, I did know this one. So you
I know this.
One.
Northern Ireland.
How about FC Punic?
Oh.
Finland?
Switzerland.
It's Armenia.
Oh.
And there's also Progress Niederkorn.
That's not real.
It's a real team. They're playing right now. You could even get their score up right now if
Progress,
you wanted to.
Progress Niederkorn. I don't know where they would be. I don't
give anything away.
Think about the size of the countries that we've already gone through.
I nearly panicked and said Prussia. That's not in a country anymore.
Prussia.
I panicked, Bill.
If there was a Prussian football team, they'd probably be very good.
Yeah, I agree, actually. That's a debate for another day. I like
imagine
that.
the Prussia v Austria-Hungary derby.
Oh, that'd be good, that.
Anyway, yeah. Progress Niederkorn.
Right, I'm going to go for... Oh, there's another really small country in Europe. Liechtenstein.
Okay, Liechtenstein.
I don't know. I'll say Finland again.
It's Luxembourg, so Danny was quite close. Tom, you're rattled by this, aren't you?
This is horrible.
And the final one, Renova.
Renova.
Renova. R-E-N-O-V-A. See, O-V-A. I think a lot of these sounded Italian, but, you know, they can't be, can they?
Yeah. I'm going to go for... That one sounds Eastern European to me.
Very clever.
Belarus.
I'll say that as well because I can't think of another country.
Now it's the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, I'm afraid. Which got me thinking about other football teams. Now, the quiz is over. You've both done incredibly badly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should be ashamed, Tom. Here's some other genuine football team names, OK? Deportivo Moron.
What?
They're an Argentinian side. Footballer Get Fart from Norway. Yeah. Deportivo Vanca, but of course it's not spelt Vanca. You were that one out for yourselves. There is a team in Norway called Love Ham.
I like that team.
You've got Joe Public in Trinidad and Tobago. Here's my favourite. This sounds like a... this sounds like a sort of DVD that young people shouldn't buy. The Botswana Meat Commission. you've got Semen Padang in Indonesia. Botswana actually bosses it with silly football teams. There's also Naughty Boys. That's just the name of the team. And Golden Bush. Eritrea Shoe Factory is a football team in Eritrea. There's a team in Bolivia called Always Ready.
Oh,
I like that.
Here's some more. Thailand Tobacco Monopoly. In Barbados, there's a football team called Insurance Management Bears. list goes on. There's in Zimbabwe, there's the Wanky Colliery FC.
Whoa.
Bolivia, I actually heard of this team before. Based in La Paz, The Strongest.
I like that.
You've got in Ghana the King Faisal Babes, and also Hearts of Oak in Ghana as well. So they're real football teams. My favourite has got to be the Botswana Meat Commission, though. That's really good. OK, let's move on to some transfer tittle-tattle. After an impressive season, it's no surprise Sam Byram's been linked with a move this summer. He's on the radar of a few Premier League sides. It's rumoured the 21-year-old could be off to Newcastle or Sunderland, but it's now Everton who are emerging as a team that could be interested. And earlier today, Tom and our daytime presenter Andy Lawson spoke to Liverpool sports journalist Shane Pinnington and asked him if it's on.
Everton like an attacking fullback. Seamus Coleman was one of their bright stars last season, wasn't it? A different season for them. So if Coleman does manage to secure a move to Manchester United, that would fit, obviously, United and Louis van Gaal well. They've been struggling to find a right back all season, so that'd be a great signing from their point of view. Obviously gives them a bit of attacking flair, and from Everton's point of view, obviously that's going to be a difficult thing to replace. And Sam Byram is obviously an up and coming star at Leeds. He's been talked about for a couple of Premier League clubs recently. Everton though with the strongest hint, so if Coleman was to leave, then obviously Byram is very firmly in Martinez's plans as one of the replacements.
Certainly when you look at Sam Byram, he does seem to be a player who's in high demand, and when you look at the teams who've been linked with him, the likes of Newcastle and things, then when you see Everton coming in, it seems to make more sense, and they seem to be, dare I say it, sorry to upset Newcastle fans, but at this stage, the biggest club who's been linked with him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Newcastle's season was very disappointing, wasn't it, from their point of view last season, and I'd imagine if Sam Byram is in Everton and they can get a deal done there, then obviously that would be his number one choice. Everton do play an attractive brand of football, and when they're on their game, they're as good as anybody in the Premier League to watch, and they're a very tap-minded team, and obviously that'll suit Sam Byram as a Mexican right-back, if you like.
And looking at Everton and their interest, apparently they've been looking at him for the past few years, so he's someone that the club certainly knows something about before they make that bid.
Yeah, I mean, from the left-hand side of Everton's defensive setup, you've got Leighton Baines and you've got the other lad, Luke Garber, who's obviously had a good under-21 campaign for England. So from the left-hand side, they're sorted, aren't they? So, but from the right-hand side, they've only really got Seamus Coleman, and when he's out, they struggle to kind of find a direct replacement for him. They obviously have still got Tony Hibbert in their ranks, but he's not getting any younger by the day, so Sam Byram would be a nice fit for them, and it wouldn't actually surprise me if they could try and do a deal anyway, regardless of whether Coleman does go to Manchester United, because, as I say, it would provide them with a perfect replacement if Coleman ever did get injured or anything.
And looking at Liverpool, they're in talks apparently to sign Sean O'Driscoll, the former Doncaster Rovers boss and the England under-19 manager, to be Brendan Rodgers' assistant manager. Obviously, they've needed one since the departures were made a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, obviously, they've chosen to spruce up their background team, really, and Sean O'Driscoll probably is a nice fit for Brendan Rodgers. Rodgers obviously likes to play an attacking brand of football. Liverpool have been one of the better sides to watch over the past couple of seasons in the Premier League, and I think O'Driscoll will bring that nice bit of experience, and also I think he fits Brendan Rodgers' philosophy as well as an attack-minded footballing manager, so it would be a nice fit for the two, and it'd be interesting to see whether he can secure that move to Anfield.
Also, Shane, one thing I wanted to ask you about is the Women's World Cup. Have you been keeping an eye on what's going on in Canada?
I must admit, I've been watching it on and off, but it's been great, hasn't it, to see the women be really successful out there. And obviously, they've got a massive game, haven't they, coming up in the semi-final. So hopefully, they can do what the England men can't do and secure their place in the final. And wouldn't it be ironic if they can get there and obviously face Germany, who play their semi-final tonight.
Now, some sad news from racing. Two-time Cheltenham Gold Cup winner Corto Star has died at the age of 15. The horse was put down after suffering pelvis and neck injuries as the result of a fall. Corto Star, who had been retired since 2012, also won the King George VI Chase at Kempton a record 5 times. And joining me to talk about it is one of Radio Yorkshire's racing experts. That's Sam Bridges. He joins me in the studio now. How are you doing, Sam?
Yeah, good. Are you?
I'm all right, but some sad news from racing today.
Yeah, very sad news. Corto Star, absolute modern, I suppose, legend of horse racing, you could say. You know, a horse that's, you know, touched so many people over the years. Absolutely fantastic performances down the years. You mentioned the King George there, you know, 2 Cheltenham Gold Cups as well. 16 Grade 1 victories, a prize pot for its owners and connections of £2.4 million over the years. 41 races, 23 wins, and an absolutely fantastic career. As you said, retired, but then went on to a career in dressage more recently. So yeah, it's a big shame, and yeah, hugely sad news, and a big shock as well to hear the news today that, you know, that he's had to be put down following that fall in the paddock.
There's such a huge list of titles and trophies. I mean, put that into context for us. Just how successful was Corto Star in horse racing in general?
But it's so difficult to come back year after year and keep winning races. And I think maybe, you know, you can look early in horses' careers, or, you know, when they get established at that grade one level where they do race in, you know, the likes of the King George and go on to race in the Gold Cup and races like that. You know, you can go and you can have a good crack at it 1 or 2 years, but to keep coming back and performing again and again and to win, you know, a race like the King George so many times just shows, you know, that whatever horse came and, you know, progressed and was seen as a realistic challenger. And in the end, it wasn't. You know, Corto Star had some great battles with Denman, another of Paul Nicholls' horses. And those two, I think, epitomised the national hunt scene for, you know, a number of years. The battles that they had, you know, Denman getting on top in a Gold Cup, denying Corto Star back-to-back victories. And, you know, it was a great rivalry in a sense, you know, and they were great friends as well. It, you know, people may, you know, laugh and scoff at that, and, you know, but they were next to each other in, you know, in Paul Nicholls's yard, you know, and looked out for each other, you know, when one horse wasn't there, the other, you know, got agitated, or as it were, you know. So, you know, they're as animals, you know, that they got on together, and, you know, when they're on the racetrack, it was, you know, something to behold, seeing two great animals go together like that. You know, and the horse had a great relationship with Ruby Walsh, the top jockey, now racing over in Ireland. And yeah, just so many, you know, great memories from his time. And I think it's been said a lot today, you know, that Corto Star, you know, a modern great, and certainly, you know, a horse that will live long in the memory.
Well, the thing for me is I know literally nothing about horse racing, but even I've heard of Corto Star, and sometimes we get sporting figures that transcend the sport and become household names, and I suppose that's very appropriate for Corto Star.
Yeah, most definitely. You can see, you know, from the reaction on social media today, you know, so many people like yourself, you know, who may not, you know, have a passing interest, you know, in horse racing, you know, may get interested a couple of times a year, Grand National, Cheltenham time, you know. And if they are those kind of characters, then you will definitely have heard of Corto Star. You'll have probably backed the horse at some point if you're a casual punter. So yeah, a lot of affection for the horse. I saw one guy who I know, you know, tweeted, "Oh, you little beauty, you won me a few quid, you know, thanks for the memories," kind of thing today. You know, it goes, you know, right from that kind of level right to the, you know, the very top. Paul Nicholls on social media, you know, he wrote earlier today, "RIP my friend, you're a true legend, once in a lifetime." And yeah, I think that does sum it up. You know, you do get certain horses for owners, for trainers, for jockeys that are once in a lifetime. Frankel on the flat a few years ago, you know, was amazing. You'll never kind of repeat that success. You know, Paul Nicholls, fantastic trainer, and has had many great horses, but, you know, Corto Star, probably his best.
Well, Sam, thank you very much for joining. It's a very sad day for racing, but maybe a good time to have some tributes and say some nice things about a true sporting great.
Ecky Thump, it's Radio Yorkshire. The Bigger Picture with Billy Banks on Radio Yorkshire.